Hi, guys, and welcome to Cycles News and Views. It is October the 3rd, and I have with me again my buddy Ed Dowd. Ed, it's been a while. For those who may not remember Ed, Ed and I have become pretty good friends. Ed used to manage a $14 billion growth fund, and we talk just about every day. Ed, welcome back.
Hey, Tim, good to be here. Thanks for having me on again. I think we're going to have some good things to talk about. There's some strange things going on these days.
Man, you're not kidding. Ed, I don't even know where to begin. You know, this market, the setup is, again, very, very, very dicey. You know, when you look at, I would like to digress just a little bit at some big picture stuff, and then we can hone in, I guess. But, you know, coming out of the 09 low, you know, I said the rally would begin and or would continue until we saw the setup. And, you know, we saw nothing. You know, even with some of the declines, I don't remember if it was 11 or 12, we saw a decline and people got kind of panicked and I said, no, we're going higher, and we did. And you know, it was not until April we saw something try to appear, and then again in the July, August, and then again now. And so it's like an earthquake coming. It's like tremors, and you see, you know, one, and then the next one comes a little sooner and a little sooner. They're closer together, and here we are again, Ed. This market, you know, we can't confirm anything yet, but man, is it on edge.
I would agree, Tim. And there's lots of other signs going on out there in the marketplace. We're getting divergences with small caps. Small caps are down year to date. You and I have talked about that. The Russell 2000 or the ETF, you can look at the IWM. Structurally, that looks like that's beginning a bear market or, you know, rolling over. I think it was down almost 8% from its August high. Or not August high, but the last high it made. So we're getting some strange things going on out there. You know, you and I talked in January, and I think we talked about signs to look for what might happen to let us know that things are starting to go a little crazy, and that we talked about the currency market. You remember we talked about the dollar? What has the dollar done since you and I talked about that theoretically? It's gone straight up.
Straight up. We had a, you know, and that's the thing, something else I want to talk about for people, and not in the point that, you know, I told you so type thing, not at all. But anyone that's reading my letter, they know what I've been saying. You know what I've been saying about the dollar, that it was making a longer-term bottom. And, you know, we made this, I call it a four-year cycle. It averages somewhere between 3 and 4 years. We made that cycle bottom in May, and the dollar is launched straight up. And, you know, the popular opinion was that the dollar was going to crash. And so these long-term statistics, they guided us with that. They told us that that was caca, and the statistics have proven correct. The same thing with commodities. Look at commodities. You know, we had that three-year cycle peak in 19 months or less. We talked about that in the letter recently. And look what has happened with commodities. It's all bearing out exactly in accordance with those statistics. And I think that these deflationary forces are going to wreak havoc on the market soon, if it hasn't already begun.
Yeah, I agree. And you remember what I said in January, and I think in subsequent interviews, we talked about what the dollar meant when it was going up. You know, the dollar going up doesn't necessarily mean it's a good thing. A lot of people and the pundits are out there saying, oh, the dollar going up means that our economy is getting better and that, you know, we're doing better than the rest of the world, so that isn't that fantastic, rah-rah. And I would say that, no, the dollar has become, you know, a sign of deleveraging. When the dollar starts going up, that means people are starting to feel pain and there's a quiet deleveraging going on. You know, remember, the reserve currency of the world is the dollar. A lot of debt was generated after the crisis when the Fed turned on the spigots in the emerging markets. So a lot of these emerging market countries issued bonds, their debt, in dollars. So as their economies roll over and the dollar goes up, it's a double whammy. They now have to pay back their debt in higher dollars, which is bad for them, so it causes their currency to go down. And it becomes this feedback loop, this vicious death spiral. And then people who are long this emerging market debt need to sell that. So you can see the dollar going up is going to start what I think is a series of margin calls across the globe. And it's going to start off slow, and then it's going to pick up speed and roll down the hill like a giant snowball that turns into an avalanche at some point.
Well, Ed, let's talk about that's a good point for me to jump in with this. I want to talk about some long-term statistics. And like I said, look, let me digress for a minute with people. And this is not to talk about a past call. A past call does not do me or you or anybody else any good other than what I want people to understand here is the power of these statistics. I use these statistical methods to identify the 2000 top and said that it would go below the 1998 four-year cycle low, and it did, exactly as the statistics said. The same thing with the 2007 top was identified using these statistics in the DNA markers. The top in commodities in 2008, the top in housing in 2005, the top in gold in 2011, and the bottom in the dollar more recently. And now we have this thing with the three-year cycle, the same methods, the same exact statistic that applied to commodities in 2008. I talked about several months ago in the research letter and warned people about that. So that same very same statistic is bearing out again. So I said all that to say this, is that I'm confident of my methods, and these same methods tell me that when this thing is set up, that we are going below the 2009 low. I realize that that sounds absolutely insane. I admit it myself. I almost can't believe it. It's almost discrediting to say that.
Yes.
But I'm just, and I'm not trying to weasel out of this statistic and saying this either, but I'm just the messenger. I do this work, I gather the statistics, I quantify the work, and it says what it says. And that's what it tells me. Ed, do you honestly see that potential? I mean, when I think about that, it's almost mind-blowing. I mean, we're talking a 10,000-point drop in the industrials. Is that possible?
You know, Tim, I've mentioned to people that there's a chance that referencing your work and referencing history and what I know about markets and fundamentals, and people's reaction is they just look at me and they're like, oh, that's a bold call. That's nonsense. You know, they just don't want to buy it. They think, again, people, when you say that, people think you're crazy and they think you're arrogant. And then the response to that is, well, the Federal Reserve won't let that happen again this time. That's the new refrain. The refrain I hear from everybody in the market who's professional, manages a lot of money, or anybody who's like a day trader or anybody who's just kind of out there, well, the Fed won't let that happen. As if the Fed had some sort of magical, mystical powers that can prevent stock market cycles from occurring. And as long as I've been around and I like to look at history, I've noticed stock markets, they go up and they go down. And even if let's say we're wrong, we don't take out the 2009 low. Your work has suggested that on average, a decline into a four-year cycle low is about what, 34%?
Something like that, yes.
I don't know. That seems like a pretty good haircut to me, not to be paying attention to it.
And statistically, that's best case scenario.
Yeah. So we're looking at a decline of somewhere between 34% and 66-70%. I mean, that's what we're talking about.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And let's talk about a couple of things here. Let's talk about the powers of the Fed. And, you know, everybody says that. I hear the same kind of thing. But what people don't understand, it's kind of comical. I think the power is somewhat of a, it's a smoke and mirrors act. In that, if you look at the chart and you look at what happened, and I don't have that chart open in front of me, but as I recall, you know, the Fed funds rate was around 7, or the discount rate was around 7% or so, roughly, in 2000. And they, in response to the short-term interest rates, you know, which lead, the Fed started cutting in 2000. The market fell, and they continued to cut, And the market fell, I think it was, what was that decline, like 40% or a little better?
Yeah.
And they cut all the way down. So to say that they prevented or stopped that decline is comical. And the same thing with the decline into, I mean, the market fell, I remember the number, 54% from the 2007 top. And, I mean, it was cut in half. And, you know, you try to sell me the bill of goods that they prevented that. Well, maybe they stopped it from falling 70%. Maybe they did help some. But I think their powers are limited. And I also think that they put themselves in a position where they're seeing a diminishing return for their efforts.
Right, I believe that. I think QE 1, 2, and 3, every subsequent QE is producing diminishing returns, both on an economic front and on the ability for them to continue to get this market to go higher and higher. And I think they know that, and that's why they're stopping. They're not stopping because the economy is getting any better. They're stopping because they just know that you just can't keep monetizing your debt. And, you know, we have another little problem that's not being all that well advertised in the mainstream media, and that's, foreign direct investment in our treasury market has declined precipitously since they started QE3. And, they know that. And to get people to come back in and purchase our debt, you need to stop the QE. So they're stopping the QE. They hope to God the stock market doesn't collapse. But, the last two times the QE was stopped, the stock market started to go down. And I think they're making a choice between, funding the government and the stock market at this point. You know, because the narrative that we're hearing that the economy is improving and things are fine is absolutely just not true. I mean, we're starting to see signs of a global deceleration in all the economic indicators, and it's certainly on its way here. They talk about employment getting better. You and I know that those employment statistics, I'm not sure what they really mean anymore. The number of people who have, permanently left the workforce is around 95 million, so that's about a third of America not working. It's just, it's crazy.
It is. I don't know. And the propaganda, Ed, it just leaves me speechless. Yesterday, like I said, people really do not understand. When I say that I don't watch TV, I do not watch TV. I was leaving to go to lunch, and I turned the TV on for my dog, and I turned it on. I don't even remember the last time it was on, but I turned it on, and CNBC was on, and I guess that's where it was last time I had it on. And before I could, 30 seconds before I could get out of the room, I heard Warren Buffett on telling everybody how good the economy was and need to be buying stocks when they're down. And, this was day before yesterday when the market was down so big, or yesterday when the market was down so big. And then before I could get out, they immediately were talking about the president coming on, and he was going to address and talk about the economy and how good the economy was. And so, here we sit with this very, very dangerous setup, and they know it because look at the propaganda on TV. Look at the bill of goods they're trying to sell people. And then it was you that was telling me a couple of weeks ago that there was this some fund manager, some guy with some credentials, real credentials, that come on, and you said he was trying to tell the lady about the dangers of the market, and she just ridicules the guy and tries to make a fool of him.
Yeah, she totally ridiculed him. She called him out and said that he told people it's probably time to get out of the market. And so that was 2 months prior to the interview he did with her. And she said, well, you cost people a lot of money, and if they had listened to you, they would have gotten out of the market 2 months ago and missed the 2 months' worth of returns. And he was shocked. He couldn't even, understand the question, because the question's absurd. You know, it's like picking up nickels in front of a steamroller.
Unbelievable.
Missing 2 months of returns.
Unbelievable.
So, Tim, here's the scorecard. I've been in cash since January, And I've sent out some probes into the market, you know, working with you on the timing stuff. And I'm up 10% year to date. And now I'm cash again, waiting to short again soon. So, you know, this, I don't know what she's talking about, 2 months worth of returns. Last time I checked, the market peaked out in September, and is, we're not sure what's happening yet, but it looks like it's rolling over here to me.
Yeah, it hasn't gone anywhere. You know, the only index that's gone anywhere really is, you know, the industrials made a new high into September with the Alibaba thing. But then if you look beneath the surface at all the other indexes, you know, look at, like I said, the small cap stuff and so forth, and you know, they haven't made new highs. I mean, they're falling apart. And you said that you'd noticed, and you know, we had talked about it, and you said that you talked to other fund managers and so forth, that they've seen it where it's harder and harder to make a nickel in the market because of the thinning market.
Right, right. What's interesting is this is classic. We see this at TOPS all the time. The indices are hitting new highs, but the underneath the market, there's a lot of new, 52-week lows. There's a lot of stocks that are off 20% from their highs, and if you're a fund manager managing money against a benchmark, and your benchmark's the S&P 500, you're getting absolutely smoked. Most fund managers are way behind their benchmarks this year because they can't keep up with it because the market's getting narrower and narrower. And so what I call distribution. So people are selling. Not necessarily the people in the mutual funds, but someone's selling or not buying. It's either or. So either someone's selling or there's a lack of buyers. And the market's quietly starting to enter bear market territory while the indices, fool people and hit new highs. It happens all the time. It's called distribution, and the tape gets painted. And, the public who's not a professional in the stock market thinks everything's fine until it isn't.
Right. Ed, I'm reluctant to talk about it, but I want to talk about this with you and get your input, and don't agree with me. You know, tell me what you really think here. But, my stance has been with not only this rally, when I say this rally, the rally out of the 09 low, but the rally out of the 02 low, that they both have occurred within the context of a secular bear market. And that, when you say that, again, that's another one of those discrediting statements. When you say that, people that don't understand, they think you're nuts. And the reason I've said that, I want to guide it. I want everyone to go to my website at cyclesman.com, and under the commentary section, there is an article that's written. It says it's not as it appears. And if you get out a basic technical analysis book, and Edwards and McGee, every technician probably on the planet has an Edwards and McGee book in their shelf. If they don't, they should. And you open it up to volume and just look at the characteristics of volume. And those volume characteristics from 1982, and the chart's in that article, it's not as it appears, from 1982 to 2000, the volume characteristics were that of a secular bull market. In 2000, you draw a line down the chart, it all changed. And not only did the volume characteristics of the market change, but then, you know, I saw some of these other charts that were floating around on the internet, and I thought, well, how cool, I'll use those and tie them into this to make the point. And they're in the article as well, and that's the velocity of money chart. It peaked out in the late 90s, I don't have that in front of me, but it was like 98, 99, 2000 as well. Right there with the market and the economy, and that job participation chart, it peaked out. And so everything I look at tells me that I am correct in that assessment when I look at hard data. The other thing, going back to the statistic about going below the 09 low, here's where that statistic comes from. If I go back and I look at, it's easy to go back because, you know, I mean, we got the data, it is what it is, and we can identify in, not according to my work, but in accordance with the old Dow Theorist work, they said it, not me. But where they define secular bull and bear markets, what I found was that in every secular bear market, 100% of the time, the decline into the four-year cycle low has moved below a previous four-year cycle low. Not 10% of the time, not 99% of the time, 100% of the time. And if you look at the 2000 top, it and the decline into the 2002 low, it moved below the 98 low.
Yep.
Which tells me that statistic is perfectly in line with that hard data, with that volume data, with that job participation data, with that velocity of money data. It moved below the 09, below the 98 low. And then they ramp and ramp and ramp and play their game and move the market up into a new high in 2007. But what happens? We go below the 2002 low, just like the statistic said. And so that statistic is 100%. Now, I don't know. Maybe this is the one time it doesn't work. I don't know. But that is the risk. When you look at those at that data that tells me we're in a secular bear market, and I look at that statistic, and to sit here and think or not realize or recognize that risk, knowing those things, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. So my question to you is, and please speak your mind. If you think otherwise, tell me, Ed, what do you think? Is it possible? I mean, help people understand in your words. I gave it to them in my words. If you agree with me, fine. If you don't, fine. But if you do, tell them in your words, how and why is this a secular bear market? How could this possibly be happening in that context?
You know, so we all know what's going on with the economy. It's not really improving. The growth that we've had in the stock market earnings are not underpinned by strong fundamentals, which and what I mean by that is it's not underpinned by strong secular revenue growth. What's been going on, the recovery in the stock market is threefold. You've had some revenue growth due to cyclicality, meaning, you know, we went down into the 08, 09 low. We went into a recession, and, you know, when you come out of recession, you have cyclical rebound. So revenues went back up off a low. But they haven't, you know, revenues of the S&P 500, you know, have been inflated by the Fed's maneuvers, so it's not real growth. Unemployment statistics are, I think, you know, absolute nonsense. And so what you have is you have an advance in the stock market, you know, that is going along with earnings. So what's going on with earnings? I talked about this, you know, several interviews ago. You have corporations that did a ton of cost cutting going into the 09 low and subsequent to that. So that helps improve earnings. Then you've had cheap Federal Reserve dollars that allow these companies to go out into the debt markets, borrow money, put the debt on their balance sheet, and then buy back their own stock, which lowers the denominator of the earnings per share calculation and gooses earnings. And then you had a rebound in consumption, not because people were getting jobs, but because the federal government handed out welfare checks, which is, you know, the modern-day equivalent of bread lines. If it wasn't for these, you know, welfare checks, we would have bread lines today. You know, people would be standing in bread lines looking for food. Today, that is, you know, people have EBT cards and they go to their supermarkets and they're able to buy stuff. And, you know, where does that money come from? Well, I'll tell you where that money comes from. That comes from the Fed printing and the government borrowing. The debt of the economy, since Obama took over, has doubled. It's gone from $9 trillion to, you know, $18 trillion. Okay, think about that. 6 years, it took 250 years to get to $9 trillion, and in 6 years, we've doubled that debt. Okay? And if you look at the chart of the growth in debt of the United States of America, it's what I call a parabolic structure. It's got a gentle slope, then the slope starts to go up at an accelerating rate through time and amount of debt, and then it just doubles in a very short amount of time. It's called a blow-off top. So, you know, how parabolic structures end, Tim. They all end very badly. So do I think that this is a secular bear market rally? You bet I do. Now, here's the other thing that's interesting. People will say, you know, this is a new secular bull market because we've gone to a new high. I do believe that we went to new highs in prior secular bear markets only to go to new lows. I think that happened in the 70s.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken, correct,
yes,
Tim?
Yes, it did.
Now, so let's go back to where we were prior to the 2013 parabolic move in the S&P and the Dow. The Federal Reserve was basically ending QE2, and the market was starting to wobble. And we had not, I don't know if we had gone to a new high at that point, maybe we were close, and so they instituted QE3. Had it not been for QE3, this market would have rolled over, and we'd be, you know, heading into the secular bear market low. So what they levitated this market one last time, and I think I think even the powers that be and the Fed were surprised at, you know, the move we had last year in 2013 when they instituted QE3. The market just took off. And basically, the reason it took off is because speculators and large, big-moneyed institutions believe that the Fed has their back and won't let this market go down. So, you know, everyone out there lost all sense of, risk and piled on the debt to borrow more stock for purchases. And so, you know, we levitated this thing on leverage. And so when it ends, it's going to go quick, and I'm afraid it's going to crash. And I don't think this is going to be a gentle 18-month bear market into the low. I think we're going to crash, and that's my fear. And it's going to happen fast because of all the excesses out there, and the fact that the Fed stretched the rubber band on this market so taut. When you stretch a rubber band and let go, it's energy released and it falls quickly or snaps back quickly. We're at month 66, or did we just enter month 67?
67.
Month 67 of the longest four-year cycle advance in the history of the stock market. Let that sink in, people. The longest stock market four-year cycle advance. The two before that, Tim, you've told me this, were 60 months, clocking in at 60 in 1987 and 2007. So we are beyond stretched.
Yep, and both of those, it should be obvious, but in case somebody missed it, both of those ended in a crash.
Yep.
And Ed, here's the other thing. People think that the Fed is, and I think it's just human nature. Everybody wants to turn to somebody to be in charge to fix things. And when you're looking at the economy and the market and that sort of thing, you know, the Fed is the god. And so everybody, they put their belief in the Fed to fix things coming out of the 2002 low. And what did they do? They created a worse problem, which is exactly what I said all throughout that rally into the 07 high. They created a worse problem. And it resulted in the worst financial disaster since the Great Depression. And now they've done it again, but even more so. And so the other thing that I want to make clear here, if people will think about something, just stand back and think about something. They look at it as if the Fed is fixing something. And there, you know, first of all, you can't fix the cycle. I mean, it has to ebb and flow. It's impossible. I mean, it's like, I think, almost like trying to hold back, you know, day turning to night. You can turn on a light and you can manipulate the daylight, I guess, but you see the point. I mean, you can't stop it. And so, but they have. And in the end, what I said is it just makes matters worse. And if you think about something with just common sense, just stand back and look at something. Every period, going back to the inception of the markets in 1896, and as I read through, you know, the writings by the great Dow Theory founding fathers, you know, they talk about previous periods of market manipulation. I mean, it's nothing new. It's all the same stuff. It's just different people involved in different price levels. It's all the same. We're all the same. And every period of manipulation has ended. It hasn't stuck. If manipulation worked, we wouldn't have had. I mean, it doesn't work, people. It doesn't work.
Right.
And so,
well,
to think it's going to be different this time is crazy.
Yeah, and you know, look, couple things. Let's talk about this. Basically, people are, it's almost like people look at Janet Yellen and the Federal Reserve. It's like they're the new high priests of Egypt. You know, the high priest in Egypt was the go-between, the gods and the people. And the power of the high priest came from their ability to, you know, go into the temple where the normal folk weren't allowed and talk to the gods. And that's and everyone thought that, you know, they had some mystical abilities. You know, today, you know, this, the most important day for market participants is FOMC meeting day, where Janet Yellen releases the minutes of the meeting and then she gives a press release. Everyone stops doing what they're doing and turns on their TVs. I'm not talking about, you know, Grandma or Joe Sixto. I'm talking about market participants who manage big dollars, and they listen to what this woman has to say, and they hang on every word. And you know what they talk about? They talk about dots. They talk about the dots of the individual members of the Federal Reserve Bank and where they are in their, you know, where the dots are in terms of future projections. And if you just step back and you think about what people, it's absurd. We're all sitting around waiting for this woman to talk about dots, as if this matters. What they've done is they've done what all humans try to do. They try to, you know, stop the pain from coming. And cycles are about, you know, there's good times and there's bad times. And they're like the Greek tale Daedalus. Daedalus was this man who wanted to go up to Mount Olympus, so he. You know, he made wings for himself out of wax and feathers, and he tried to fly to Mount Olympus, and then the sun melted his wax, and he fell to Earth. And that's what's going to happen in the stock market. The stock market, I call this the Daedalus stock market. We're flying too close to the sun, Tim. We're about to melt, and we're going to crash.
Well, I know that it's hard. You know, some of this stuff is hard for people to see with the market setting at new highs. I realize that some of these statistics are hard to understand. The concept of a secular bear market with the market at a new high, I get all that. But look, you know, I'm sticking to the data. The data tells me what the data tells me. And, Ed, this is just not good. And when you see things like we see on CNBC and trying to convince people otherwise, I mean, I have to classify that as criminal behavior just about. Because it's theft. I mean, if you lie to someone and you cost them money, I mean, what's the difference in holding a gun to their face and taking their money?
Well, Tim, I'm not sure they're lying. I just think they're stupid.
Well, maybe they are stupid, but maybe they're not. Maybe they do know better. I don't know.
Well, there are some participants that will get on CNBC that manage billions and billions of dollars and tell you what to do, and they do the exact opposite. That happens all the time. Make no mistake about it. They say buy, and what they're doing is selling, and they hope that you are buying from them. That happens a lot.
Yeah, I understand. I totally
understand. You know, hey, before I go, you want to talk quickly about what we're seeing here and what's going on with the current situation?
Well, in what respect, Ed? What direction you want to go? That you're talking about the market, or what do you want to?
The market. There's a delicate setup going on, and it could go either way.
It could, and what it boils down to is like I said, since the 09 low, we've seen a couple of setups try to take place, and they've all occurred this year. Until then, you know, it's been fine, but now we're seeing the tremors, and they're closer and closer together. We have a very, very, very fragile setup now. And to be quite honest, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's there. And in my world, what I need to see, it's about structure. It's about structure. And so I need to see proof. Either I'm going to see proof that this setup is going to mend and morph away and the can's going to be kicked down the road again, or I need to see proof that it's locked in. And that's what I'm waiting on. I mean, I have to see that. That's crystal ball there. I don't know which way that's going to go. Flip a coin. I don't know. I have an idea. I need to see the setup to confirm it.
Well, you know, just as I was saying in the beginning of the interview, things have been kind of calm until, you know, this July when we had a peak to the, you know, remember we peaked out on July 3rd. I don't know if you've noticed, or maybe you did, but the dollar which had a low in May, really took off when the stock market peaked in July, and the dollar really just basically went on a, you know, a 14-week advance from there. And what's different this time than the last 5 years is this dollar situation and the commodities collapsing. And, look, I'm not saying this is 1929, although I'm seeing a lot of similarities. In 1929, the dollar was king because there were problems in Europe. Europe was having issues, and the commodities started collapsing in the summer of 1929. And, you know, when you start having currency volatility, what that says to me is that the central banks, who have been up until this point, you know, in control, they're losing control of the situation. The currency markets are telling you to be very, very careful right here, because volatility is getting out there and it's working its way into other asset classes. It's going to work its way into bonds. It's already smashing commodities. And I have no doubt in my mind it's going to smash stocks at some point. And I'm predicting, and I think you are as well, it's sooner rather than later. And, you know, again, the difference between what you and I were talking about in January and today is the dollar is on a tear. And you and I talked about the dollar getting on a tear in January and March of this year. And to say if we saw that, you should the hair on the back of your neck should be raised. And I am putting capital to work on the short side. I did a short in the beginning of September, on September 4th. I made money. I covered recently. I'm going to go start shorting again. So we're close.
Ed, I appreciate you being on. We need to do a follow-up soon, maybe in a week, maybe two. We'll just play it by ear and see what's happening you know, do it when we need to. But, you know, I just want to, I guess, my message to people, rather than think Ed and I are crazy, maybe you ought to look at some data before it's too late. You know, all of these statistics, and Ed will attest to it, it's not made up. It's real, it's in print, and all of these statistics have come to pass. And the most recent one is the advance in the dollar and the downturn in commodities, which we predicted coming out of the 09 low. I said that it would be a counter-trend bounce in commodities, and it has been. Now, I also said that it'd be a counter-trend bounce in stocks. They have managed to push to a new high in all fairness. I did not expect that, but nonetheless, that fact has not changed the context in which the rally has occurred. And just as all these other statistics have come to pass, there's no reason to think that these won't, and it's the setup that, you know, I mean, I have to see that setup. That's all I can say. I can't give this thing a death certificate until that's in place. So that said, Ed, I don't have anything else to add. Man, I really appreciate you being on. And you have any last closing comments? Do you want to give out your tweet address or email address or anything like that so people can contact?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at DowdEdward on Twitter. And I'm also currently blogging under the pseudonym Blue Star at the website iBankCoin.com.
Okay, guys. Y'all get in touch with Ed. And anyone interested in the research letter, it's coming out here this weekend, October 5th, I guess it will be. Ed, let's talk soon. Thanks, man.